This is the audio that goes along with the Shelley versus Kramer case, where we're going to explore another way in which courts might limit the scope of covenants. So we've talked about the kind of creation side of it. We're going to talk also about how courts might limit the actual enforcement of covenants. We kind of see this with the third restatement's approach to touch and concern. But we're going to find other ways in which they limit it as well. So Shelley versus Kramer is a famous Supreme Court case. Comes about in the mid-1940s. This is around the same time in which there are pushes for passing the Civil Rights Act, which actually doesn't come about until many years later, where years pass the 13th and 14th Amendment. And there's this kind of push to see whether we can actually require and control the ability of private individuals to discriminate in a variety of ways. And so this house here is famous. If you actually click on the link and go to the street view, you'll actually see a plaque out in front of the house. And the plaque there is saying that this is the house that was in question in Shelley versus Kramer. And in this case, we have a situation where Shelley is buying a house here in Missouri and around the St. Louis area, which is always kind of suffered from these kind of discriminatory practices even till today. And Kramer is trying to restrict, essentially enforce, a covenant that applies to the property, at least arguably applies to the property. So if you go to the second slide, we actually get a sense of the servitude that we're talking about. So 30 of 39 houses here on Labadee Avenue have these recorded easements or covenants. We'll talk about whether it is one or the other here in just a second, in their deeds. And the language says that said property is hereby restricted to use and occupancy for a term of 50 years from this date, so that hereafter no part of said property, any portion shall be occupied by any person other than a Caucasian. It gets incredibly explicit as to the individuals that can't be tenants and occupy the location either as an owner or as a tenant in a landlord-tenant type of relationship. It turns out that Shelley, who's buying the property, is an African American. One of the neighbors here is Kramer. So Fitzgerald is transferring it to Shelley. Let's assume Fitzgerald is one of the original of these 30 of 39 houses in this area that have this language in their deeds. And Kramer is someone who lives close by. And so Kramer wants to get the courts, and here it's actually the state courts, to enforce this language here. So what is it? It looks like it's a restrictive covenant. It's preventing someone from doing something on the property here, occupying the property if they're not Caucasian. We can start to think about some of our basic requirements for covenants. We've got to have it in writing. We've got it in writing here. It looks to be something that has the intent to go beyond just a personal relationship. It looks like it says for 50 years of time period. So it has a time limit on it, but that limit seems to push it beyond the idea of the individual owner that's there. We'll talk here in a little bit about horizontal privity. It looks like at least we have vertical privity because Fitzgerald is selling the restricted side to Shelley, right? And let's assume Kramer is one of the original owners that was in this 30 of 39 houses that are around this area. We'll also talk about touch and concern here in just a second. And so if we go to the third slide, we've got this purchase. There's no actual knowledge that Shelley has of the covenant, the restricted covenants that's there, but we would still say that there is a constructive notice. Why is there constructive notice? Because we'd have record notice, the fact that this is written down, it's in the deed. Shelley is on de facto notice of it. And if you look at the covenant's language, it's not a violation of the covenant for Shelley to own the property, but it is for Shelley to occupy it because Shelley is African American. And so the court actually does not go down the avenue to say whether we have an enforceable covenant or not. Instead, the court pushes another direction and says, we've got this thing called the 14th Amendment, and we can't have a state action that engages in something that discriminates in this way. And if the court was to issue an injunction saying, okay, Shelley, you've got to abide by this restrictive covenant, that would be a state action, and that state action would violate the 14th Amendment. This is a big deal not just for the covenant at issue here. It's a big deal for any kind of private ordering. So a contract or other type of property relationship, any of that that takes place, that we then need to go to a federal or state actor to enforce it. Shelley versus Kramer says, okay, well, state actor, you can't do that. We can't issue an injunction to enforce something that is discriminatory. We can think about why we want something more than simply not enforcing it. We really like to kind of erase these things, not in the sense of kind of forgetting history, but erase them because they signal in certain ways. They certainly have a stigma attached to them. So invalidating them would be a good push or way to do this. And so how could we actually invalidate the covenant? We've already talked about the fact that we probably have vertical privity here on the burden side. We've got intent. We've got notice. We've got a writing. What about horizontal privity? It won't shock you that these were neighbors that just simply got together and said, hey, let's all agree to make sure that our houses are only occupied by Caucasians. If that's the way they created it, there's no horizontal privity because there was no transfer of property one way or another when we have the creation of the covenant. So we don't have that property relationship for the covenant to attach onto. So there wouldn't be horizontal privity. So if we were in a first restatement jurisdiction, this wouldn't be a valid covenant. What about touch and concern? We can go through our different ways in which we might have touch and concern. We can first start with the English approach. If it's a restrictive covenant, it touches and concerns. If it's an affirmative covenant, it doesn't touch and concern. Here it's a restrictive covenant, so it turns out it would meet that requirement. What about the New York approach in Neponset? We ask ourselves, okay, does it actually restrict or burden the land in question? It clearly does. And then the next question becomes, okay, does it increase or benefit some property surrounding or that's absolutely there currently? Right. Depends on at the time. The fact that we actually have a sale at the time to Shelley suggests that maybe things are changing in this area of St. Louis, and now it no longer has a potential benefit and value to the same or some surrounding land. The fact that Kramer is trying to enforce it, we might have it there. And then finally, we'd say, okay, well, how much is this actually touched to the actual use of the property? There's a possibility that here this covenant would pass the Neponset kind of test for touch and concern. If we get to the third restatement, though, this is what the third restatement's all about, preventing covenants like these from being enforced, even if it turns out they might have been arguably socially acceptable at the time, which they obviously shouldn't have. At least now they're not. And the third restatement gets right at it, right? If it's unconstitutional, if it's kind of arbitrary or capricious, it's not enforceable, right? And so in that concern, the third restatement gets right at the heart of it and would invalidate the covenant. Finally, this question, like, what if Fitzgerald refused to sell the property to Shelley today? Here is where our Fair Housing Act actually comes into effect, right? This is where we don't allow people to change or prevent the transfer of property based on certain classes of individuals. Here it would be an ethnicity. It wouldn't be allowed. Finally, if we kind of go back to an earlier writing assignment, this was the one that I had you guys do at the end of the present and future estates. You might not have appreciated it as much then, but there would be a problem of enforcing, at least under Shelley versus Kramer, the Buddhist limitation. So if I went to a court and said, hey, actually this conveyance has a limitation on the ability of Betty's youngest girl to take possession. This is a contingent remainder for this reason. And the reason is because of the religion of Betty. Shelley versus Kramer would be one of the cases where the court could say, look, we can't enforce that restriction. And the reason we can't enforce that restriction is we can't have a state action that would violate the 14th Amendment. And so here you could see potentially the application of Shelley versus Kramer in a different context. And here the context would actually be that of present and future estates.